Hello, everybody. Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Kat, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal story is described in their own language and from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our own membership and clear-cut ideas of what happened in their lives. We hope that no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them, too. I must have this thing. And Frank is going to come up and introduce our speaker tonight.
I'm Frank Waters, now recovered alcoholic. I don't see a list of good things to say about you, Jeremy. Okay. I've known Jeremy for a while. We all have speed bumps in our recovery. He seems to have gotten over his for the time being. You know, he persevered, and he's back with us, and he lives up to his responsibilities. Takes care of his kids. Takes care of himself. He actually has fun doing it. And for a lot of us, that's really hard to do, is to have fun sober. But he has fun in life. And he's a friend of mine. You ought to get to know him if you don't. Stout, come on up.
Can y'all hear me? I probably do need a chair. I'm Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I'm pretty nervous right about now. Let's see how much time I got. 8:12. Oh, dear God. Okay. Well, I go ahead and start. My sobriety date is October 29th, 2013. My birth date is September 29th, 1978. That's when my story originally began. I was born... I was born to a father who was an alcoholic and to a mother who was, sometimes I still wonder if she loved me or not, but she was a very abusive woman. She's a very sick woman, very, very sick woman. Mine and her relationship, very rocky, you know, is very rocky, to say the best. My first childhood memory, I was 3 years of age, and I was molested by my 15-year-old cousin. You know, so basically this is how my life pattern started out. That happened between the age of 3 to 4. How it stopped was my mother actually walked in on it, and she walked in on it, slapped me in the face, and blamed me for everything. Nothing was ever done about my cousin, which, you know, bothered me for a long period of time, and that started mine and my mother's relationship. It's easy for me to talk about today, you know, by working the steps and everything else. I've got a lot of baggage gone away, but, you know, it used to be a time when I couldn't speak about it. Wouldn't even dare to think and talk about it. I do want to apologize if I do offend anybody because there's drug use in my story, you know, and I will. If anybody gets offended by that, I do apologize now. But... you know, I always felt as a child as I was growing up, you know, my father was an alcoholic, and he was my best parental figure. Now, my father loved me. You know, out of all his children that he had, and I just found out I had 3 brothers and sisters that I never knew about till this year. So he had a lot of children, and which we're actually having a great, I have one great relationship with one of my sisters, and I get to meet one of my brothers here, you know, very shortly. But so I was the only child that he actually raised. He actually stayed at home with. My father was one of those drinkers who, you know, he would go on a binge, you know, and he would be gone for 2 or 3 days. Anytime when I got off the school bus when I was young and I'd see his truck gone, well, I knew what was fixing to happen. I was going to get blamed for him drinking, blamed for him not being there, and there was going to be a beating behind it. That's just how my mother was. She was a very, very, very angry woman. She's only about this tall, y'all, okay? And that woman scares the crap out of me to the day. And she only weighs probably about 70 pounds. You know, she's a lot shorter than me, but she is much, you know, she's a rageaholic, you know. I can't say she's an addict. She is prescribed pills, but she doesn't take them where she's supposed to be taken. Anyway, that's a different story. But growing up, I kind of felt that, you know, I never got that love from my mother, and my best friend was actually a dog. Okay, I don't know if anybody ever experienced that. Those were my best friends, was animals. So, you know, I would actually, when something happened, I'd go running in the woods with my dog and everything else just to escape. You know, and I valued more of an animal's life than I did a human being's life. You know, and so growing up, that's where I found some of my release. And also growing up, I played baseball. That was a huge release of mine, getting into sports. My father coached me a bunch of times. He was drunk at the game. A couple times he got kicked out. You know, one time actually me and him actually got kicked out of the same game. We're sitting there on the tailgate and he's sitting there drinking. So that was a pretty fun moment. But you know, I found a lot of peace and ease when I stepped onto a baseball field. And you know, today one of the greatest things to me is the smell of fresh cut grass. You know, it brings me back to a time when I had peace and when I was playing baseball. That was my most serene moment. You know, just out there. You know, and I was a good athlete. I was a good ball player. Which getting into high school, you know, kind of backfired because my ego really kicked in once I started drinking. You know, all through my childhood, I always felt I wasn't wanted. I always felt that, you know, and I was told that by my mother. You know, it wasn't just physical abuse, it was emotional abuse as well. And, you know, that I wasn't worthy of anything, you know. And that's just how my mother proceeded. I remember this. I used to go in my mother and father's room, and I used to look for adoption papers. Praying that I was adopted, that I would find adoption, and this would explain everything. This would absolutely explain why I'm going through this, you know, and never found adoption papers, you know, never did. my first drink, I was 12 years old. It was a hot summer day, and my dad always kept his Canadian Mist pints up under his truck, out there in the floorboard of his truck and everything, so... it was a hot summer day. I seen my dad. He went out and he turned it up. And when I figured, I'm like, well, I'll go out there and turn it up too. So I took a couple of big sips. The next thing you know, it went everywhere. So my first experience was terrible with alcohol. I mean, I threw up everywhere. I was sick as a dog. My dad actually came outside and he saw me around his truck. And he just looked at me. He goes, we can't tell your mama. You know, so my childhood was not, you know, not necessarily great. But like I said, my dad was pretty much, he was my biggest hero. You know, he may have been an alcoholic, but I respected the man. He was a roofer and he was a hardworking guy. You know, and I did respect him. And he did show me love, and you know, and some of my greatest memories of playing catch with him. You know, one of the things was I was a freshman in high school. I was 14 years old, and we was playing Buford that day, and it was the last game of the season. And I went 3-for-4 that game and had a few RBIs and actually turned a double play at third base. Had a pretty good game as a freshman. And that was the last ball game my father got to see me play. He was drinking that night. Me and him got into a little bit of an argument watching the Braves game. And my grandmother woke me up at 5 o'clock, about 5:20 in the morning. And when I got into the living room, he was already on the floor. He had a massive heart attack. And he took his last breath in my arms. That was the moment when, I remember that moment, you know, dearly, because everything just changed from that moment on. My relationship with God at that time was, I did believe there was a God. But when all that happened and my dad died, I just couldn't fathom that God would leave me with my mother. Why would you do this? Why would you put me through so much of this pain and this torture? Okay, that's just how I felt as a child. So a few weeks after my dad's funeral, I decided to tell God how I felt about it. And ever since, up until I came into AA, my relationship with God, I didn't have one. You know, I didn't have one whatsoever. And basically how I felt about God at that time is, he put me on this earth to suffer. And I couldn't understand how you could do that to your child. You know, if he was a loving God and this, that, and the other, how could you do this to your child? So, so a few weeks after my dad died, I had my second drink, which was a Miller Lite. That tasted like piss. Okay. So I did not like beer. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I said, it took me a whole hour to drink this freaking Miller Lite. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This tastes like piss. So a few weeks went by. There was a field party. I grew up in the country. And, you know, and in the country, it's pretty much, if you're going to have a party, it's basically going to be out in a cow pasture. And big bonfires, and the only thing you got to watch out for is cow crap. Just make sure you don't step in it. If you do, rake it off on somebody's truck. So somebody came there and introduced me to Jim Beam. And when I took the first swig of Jim Beam, the first one went down, it didn't go down that smooth, but by the time I got to the third one, that's when everything changed. And I'm like, man, I love this. I'm dancing on the tailgate tonight. You know, we're going to have a good time tonight, baby. And that's when I fell in love with Jim Beam. After that, baseball wasn't too much of a concern to me. You know, as I was told, I chose a different life. I do believe that today I chose a different style of life at that time. School wasn't a concern to me. I didn't care about academics at that time either. So everything started going downhill. And my senior year, I actually had scholarships to actually play baseball. And, well, needless to say, NCAA frowns on cocaine use. So that kind of took that scholarships away and took them out of the water. So, you know, and I just, when I drank, it made me feel such, you know, it made me feel like I was about 6'6", 250, you know, and there wasn't nothing in this world I couldn't do. You know, I wasn't afraid of anything or anyone. Didn't care what you thought about me. Didn't care what you thought about anything. I was not a nice drunk. I was not a nice guy. Started working at a warehouse when I was 19 after high school. And I worked my way up for a year, and I became a warehouse manager there, and which was kind of crazy. He put me in charge of a warehouse, and I'm like, this is awesome. So when I got in charge of a warehouse, over as a warehouse manager, one of the guys I had worked for me is a guy I bought weed from. Other guy that worked for me is a guy that I bought cocaine from. Perfect. You know, this was absolutely perfect for me. Production sucked, but, you know, I didn't care. It was just absolutely perfect to me, you know. At that time, I really didn't have any kind of consequences to my life, you know, whatsoever. Had none whatsoever. No jail time, no nothing. No DUIs, no anything of that nature. Knock on wood, I've never had a DUI. How it happens, I don't know. But friends of mine used to call me the DUI ninja. I just get out of, I drive home 2, 3, 4 in the morning drunk, but I never got a DUI, which was amazing. It was very amazing. I was 23 years old. I had a 23 years old. It was a Hooters trip, and Hooters and Conyers was offering a trip to the Braves game. All you did was pay $30. Got a ticket to the Braves game, all the hot wings you wanted to eat, all the beer you wanted to drink before you left, and in the shuttle bus up there. Well, on the shuttle bus up there, they had a keg on the bus. So, you know, I mean, so I'm sitting there, I'm just like, this is awesome. So me and my four buddies, we were sitting there, and the tickets were up in the upper deck. So, you know, we're just pounding beers back and everything, and next thing you know, I'm looking at them, I'm like, well, let's just go to the Budweiser plant. So the last thing I remember that game was the fifth inning of that game. I was a blackout drinker. You know, when I drank, I just drank, until I blacked out. Woke up next morning, and I had people tell me about what happened. So, anyway, this is what I was told. Well, this is what happened. The cops did catch me. Got back on the shuttle bus. Me and a guy got into it, and I got the Hooters. We drank a couple more pitchers. Me and him got into it, followed him out. I went down 138 right behind him, and he stopped at the red light, and I did not hit him. And I got out of the vehicle, and I told the guy, I said, well, let's pull over here to the Chevron and exchange insurance numbers. So my buddy was beside me at the time, and apparently they pulled over, but I kept down 138. So I was gone. that was the first time I got in trouble with the law. They didn't find me till 4 months later is when they found me, and I got a phone call, and it was like, "Mr. Kitchens, we know what happened. Could you come into the Congress Police Station, Sheriff's Department, and get this matter settled, or are we going to come pick you up at work?" I said, "Well, I'll be there at 8 o'clock in the morning." And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, well, if I don't remember this shit, it didn't happen. You know, that's just how I looked at it. If I didn't do it, if I don't remember, it didn't happen. Well, cops see it differently. They have this thing called evidence. And they could place me at the scene of the crime and the accident. And not to mention a couple of friends that actually told on me. So that kind of didn't help either. So as I was sitting there at the police station, I walked in. Walk into the police station. I'm sitting there talking to the cop. And actually, the cop was real nice. He helped me out. You know, instead of hit and run, they couldn't get me for a DUI. So I told him, yeah, I've been drinking that night. I said, last thing I remember was the fifth inning of the ball game. He couldn't get me for a DUI. All they got me was following too close and everything. And while I'm sitting there getting booked in, and I'm sitting there reading the rules. This is funny. I'm sitting there reading the rules. Well, all of a sudden, they got a field trip coming through. And I look up, and there's my cousin. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, dear God. So he come walking in, and she looks at me. She goes, Jeremy. I'm like, hey, how you doing? How's your mom and them doing? You okay? So that was a pretty embarrassing moment, but it was pretty funny. She still talks about the family reunion. I wish she would stop. But it is what it is. You know, my drinking at the time, I thought I had everything under control. I met a woman who became my wife, well, ex-wife now, but became my wife at the time. And, you know, man, I told so many lies to her, it was unreal. You know, for the first 3 weeks we dated, she didn't even know I smoked cigarettes. And, you know, I lied to her so much, you know, she didn't know who I was by the end of our marriage. We dated. 6 months into our relationship, I got engaged. I was pregnant the month before, found that out. And our wedding was 3 months after we got engaged. And, you know, I remember the conversations that me and her had, you know, about she wanted me to stop drinking and everything. And we're fixing to have a family. And I'm like, sure, that's no problem. You know, I will quit for my daughter. That lasted 2 months. You know, and I was very angry, very irritable. You know, I was depressed. And that just lasted 2 months. So then I got a job offer up in Charlotte, North Carolina. We moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. Rock Hill, South Carolina. My job was in Charlotte. So we moved to Rock Hill, South Carolina. And I thought, well, man, this is going to be perfect. I'm leaving everybody behind. My daughter at that time was, Abigail was 2 months old. And I thought, I'm leaving all my problems behind. Everything's going to be perfect. 250 miles away. If people want to see me, you got the call to come see me. And I can easily be like, no, we're not going to be here this weekend. You know, and I had everything I wanted. You know, I had the wife was going to be secluded, away from her family, away from my family and everything else. And I was like, man, this is just what I need. Well, we was up there for 1 month, found out we was pregnant again. So I got baby number two on the way, and it was my son. My drinking got worse. I couldn't stop no matter what. You know, I told her I'd quit for Jacob. Couldn't quit for him. My drinking continued to get worse. So see, I've already tried a geographical change. I've already tried to quit drinking for other people. You know, and this is before I even thought about AA. You know, AA wasn't even in the picture for about another four or five more years. So, get a phone call, and my wife is telling me her grandmother fell and broke her hip, and she wanted to go back home. So I quit the job up there. We moved in with my in-laws, which moving in with my father-in-law was not the greatest thing in the world. But I was grateful. Today I'm grateful that he gave me an opportunity to live there, you know, gave me and my family a place to stay. But living with your in-laws is not that great. It's really not. But he was a pretty controlling kind of guy. And so me and him butted heads a lot. We was there probably 4 months, and we found a place on Highway 36. Around about that time, baby number three, I remember when my ex-wife asked me, she was like, can we have another child? The other two was never planned. They just happened. And I didn't want to. I really didn't want to until one day I kind of conceded. I said, you know what? A friend of hers, they were trying to have a baby. Next thing you know, I conceded in. I said, okay. So baby number three was on the way. My third child is a very special child to me. All of them are. But my third child is very special. She was only born with one finger on each hand and two toes on each foot. And I say this. I'm not going to cry. And I say this because when she was born, how the depths of this disease had me. She was in the NICU, and she had an IV going through her forehead, and my ex-wife was sitting there looking at me, and she looked at me and said, "Well, you know, if you want to, you can go home." She didn't mean that, but I looked at her right there and I said, "You know what? See you. I'll pick you up in 4 days." Then I left my wife and my child in there, and I went home and I drank, and I got just drunk. That was an amends I had to make to my ex-wife, and I'll never forget when she mentioned that to me. It was about 2 years ago. She mentioned that to me in my face, and I'm like, wow, she remembered that. That's how powerful it was to her. So, you know, shortly after that, she gave me ultimatums. If I didn't quit drinking, you know how it goes. If you don't quit drinking, I'm going to leave you this, that, and other. Yeah, right, you're not going anywhere. I'm the only one that works. I'm the breadwinner and everything else until one day when we got into an argument and I was drinking, and I looked at her and I told her I put a bullet in her head. She didn't shut her mouth. And the next morning, the cops came out with a TPO and told me that's a terroristic threat. I told him it was a damn promise, and he told me I had 5 minutes to get me a backpack and get the hell out of the house. She didn't want me locked up. But that's just where I was at in my disease. I mean, I also suffer from other conditions. I'm a rageaholic. You know, when I get mad, I can blow up real easy. You know, and that's something that's I work on a daily basis to control. And sometimes it takes over. It takes the best of me. When the cop told me I had 5 minutes, I was in there packing up things and I was getting the suitcase ready, and I was rolling down the hallway, and something just clicked. I'm like, I got a half a pound of weed in here. I need to get that out of here. So I looked at the officer. I said, could you give me a couple more minutes so I can go back and get my personal things? And so I went back, rolling my suitcase back down the hallway, and went in the closet, and I stuffed a half a pound of weed out and walked right out the door with the cop sitting right there. And that's the insanity of this damn disease. I mean, that's just insane. You know, and there's a cop sitting right here. I could have went to jail. Not only that, could have took the house. You know, my kids lived there. There's all kind of stuff that could have happened. You know, thank God it didn't. After that point, you know, I hit a very. After that point, the disease just progressed worse. I remember when I first came into the rooms. I thought this was like a cult. You know. Everybody opens up with a prayer. Y'all say a prayer at the end. And I'm like, man, when I say our Father's prayer, I'm like, the next thing I hear is, play ball. You know, I'm not used to this. But I did. I thought, this is like a freaking cult, man. Everybody prays at the beginning. You pray at the end. And I'm like, what the hell? So I came into the rooms, and I got a sponsor. As I was told, I only took 40% of his suggestions to begin with, which he was right. I mean, he was absolutely right. I only took 40% of his suggestions. Actually, I got engaged, and here's the funny thing about it. I called him that day, and I told him, I said, hey, man, I just got engaged. He goes, well, when do you think he was going to tell me? I said, well, I'm telling you now. You know, I didn't even run that by him at the time. I was still in my own self-will even when I came into recovery. So got into an argument. Well, actually, I didn't get into an argument. Something happened, and I left very angry. And I went back to my hometown, and I went back to live with my mother. And for some reason, I don't know why, it was always easy for me to run back to her, even though this is the woman that I could not stand. I just could not stand her whatsoever. But it was so easy for me to run back to that comfortability of pain. You know, it was just, that's where I'm comfortable at. You know, it's very uncomfortable for me to be around somebody that says, I love you. You know, that's uncomfortable. You know, come here. You know, the AA, when I first came into AA, people hugging you and everything, that was uncomfortable. But somebody that gives me pain and everything, you know, that's comfortable to me. It was an easy place to run to. So I went back home to live there. And it was only a short period of time. I actually had a good job. My brother-in-law, I built a relationship with my sister and him, and my brother-in-law offered me an opportunity to run this company up here in Atlanta. And I did. I did that for probably just a couple months. I did that for a couple of months, and there's still an amends there I have to make because I embezzled money from them. My sister still to this day will not tell me how much it is. She says she may ask for it. She may not. I still don't know how much I took from them. You know, and that's where the disease took me. And my idea was this, was I would just take a little bit out, but I'd put it back, but I never put it back. You know, and so I don't know how much money I owe them. I went downhill to a rocky path. I got to a path to where you know, it was one day on a road. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning. I was walking down a country road, and I invited the devil into my life at that time. And that's where it took me to, and that's where my bottom started. I was very much out there drinking and doing methamphetamines, and it was a very dark road. August the 29th was a day when, August the 20th is actually a day when I remember calling my sponsor that day, and I was in a lot of pain. And he sent me a text message, and I'll actually read later what he sent me. It's very special to me. First, when I read it, I was like, oh, crap. You know, I started cussing and everything else. But then the next day I read it, and you know, it made a lot of sense. And I called him the next day. He was actually on the golf course. And by that time, I was already gone, and I was living with my dope man at that time. I came in Labor Day weekend, August the 29th, when I came back to the rooms. I was 60 miles away, didn't know how I was going to get here. I called my sponsor. He said, call Annette. And he said, call me back in 5 or 10 minutes. He said, now call me back. And I said, okay, I will. I was actually sitting on his porch step, sitting there crying and everything. Cars going by, people probably looking at me like, what the hell? And so I called Annette, and she said, just come on home. You know, come on back here. And at that time, didn't know how I was going to get here. The only way I could have got there was somebody could have came and got me the next day. And I knew that I probably wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have made it. So, the guy I was living with, the dope man, he overheard the conversation, and he looked at me and he goes, listen, man, I'll take you anywhere you need to go because you need freaking help. So, my dope man brought me back into the rooms and then back into recovery. That's how bad off it was. Now, whether or not he needed help or he wanted me off his couch or quit smoking all his dope, I don't know. You know, but today I'm very grateful for that and thankful for that. It's a pretty wild ride. One of the first things when I came back, my sponsor actually told me this. He said, listen, you come back, I'll pay your first week. And I remember that Wednesday night when he handed me the money and all these thoughts are going through my head. And he looks at me and goes, I expect you to do the right thing. And I ran down there and the first thing I ran, as soon as he dropped me off from after the meeting, I ran down there and paid him the money. That was the first right thing I did. Second right thing I did was met at Chick-fil-A and we was going over why I relapsed. And at that point in time, he told me exactly this. He said, I'm not going to make suggestions to you. I'm just going to tell you what you need to do, and either you do it or you're going to drink. Second right thing is I submitted myself to another human being. And I listened. I know I've taken over 40% of his suggestions today. I know that. And I listened to another human being and his advice that he had to give me. And frankly, he knows better than me. You know, I think a lot of times when we come in here, we get wrapped up. We don't want to hear what somebody has to tell us to do or anything else, but good God, they know what they're talking about. Hell, they're sober. You know, I didn't know nothing. You know, third thing is when I took the third step. And it says in the third step, you care of. Okay? Care. All God wants to do is just take care of us. And when I made that decision to just turn my will and life over to Him, to the care of God, and let Him take care of me, and let Him handle my problems, you know, things are a lot easier. Now, don't get me wrong, I do play tug of war with God. And my God has an understanding that He wins, you know, but I do play tug of war with Him. I'll take it back and I'll give it to Him and I'll take it back again. you know, AA, I'm very grateful for AA. Without AA, I wouldn't be a father. Without AA, I wouldn't share moments, beautiful moments, playing golf, watching a bird fly over with a fish in its talons. If I was drunk, I would have never saw that. You know, just little things like that. It's just beautiful. Having fun with friends. I actually got to go to the Jekyll Island convention, the AA convention, and we all got to camp out down Jekyll Island and had a great time, and it was just awesome getting to be there on the beach. There's nothing, I'm such a complicated person that God had to, and this is just my opinion, God had to make AA for us to find Him. Because otherwise I would have never found God. If it wasn't for AA, I wouldn't have a relationship with my higher power, which is God. Step four and five was a huge process for me. At that time, a lot of things clicked and a lot of things happened. I actually had right before then I had a plan and I hadn't seen my kids in about 6 months. And I had a plan to get my kids that one weekend. It was right before Christmas, 2 weeks before Christmas, and my plan was just get them for the whole weekend and everything else. Well, that fell through, and I was very angry and everything else. And I just heard people say, "Just keep praying, keep having faith, just keep doing what you're doing." Well, God had a bigger plan for me, and that bigger plan was basically this: I got to spend Christmas in 2013, Christmas morning with my children for the first time in 4 years. That was His whole plan for me. And it was a huge gift from God. I'm trying not to cry. Jesus Christ. That's a huge, huge gift from God right there, to be able to do that. And have that moment with my kids. And I went down a couple months later after that, and I got to spend another weekend with them. And I got my golf clubs. I actually had to go to my dope man's house to get my golf clubs. How about that? And unfortunately, he wasn't there. His wife was. Got my golf clubs. I said, "See you later, bye." And so I got the golf clubs, and I was sitting there in my uncle's house, and the kids were outside. And I let them play with my golf clubs. My golf clubs are about $1,000. I never let them play with it. My kids are out there hitting rocks, hitting balls. They're doing all this, and they look at me, and they go, "Wow, we like the daddy that you've become." My kids are growing up in AA. That was huge. I was an abusive father to them at the time. Was being past tense because that's not who I am today. That was huge. Okay. Four and five, when I sat down with my sponsor and I did my fifth step, we sat down and we shared a moment that was it was pretty amazing. You two grown men holding hands, sitting there crying, and he said, "We will get through this together." And at that time, I believed that this is the WE program, and it is, guys. For anybody here that doesn't believe that, it is. This is a WE deal, This is a WE program. And I had to find help outside of AA, and that's okay. I found a therapist who was a God-based therapist, and, man, she helped me with a lot of my issues, a lot of my problems, but I was willing to go to any lengths to do that. When I first came in, I wasn't willing to go to half the lengths. This time around, I'm willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, and have a better way of life. The joys today that I have, the little things that I have, for the past almost 2 years, about a year and a half, I've paid child support. That's huge. My ex-wife knows she gets a check every week. Okay? She can count on that. That's one responsibility of being a father that I am. The other one is, for about almost the past year, for over the past year, I've got my kids every other weekend. That is big. I may have to ask people for rides and everything because I don't have my license or nothing, but that is big. Coming from this alcoholic who really at the time used to think my kids were a burden to me. That's how I viewed them when they were growing up. They was a freaking burden, and today they're the most precious gift God has given me besides sobriety. I have a 9-year-old who is going into Quest. Okay? I have family and friends, and Quest is for advanced learning in school. So she's already telling me, "Next year I get to learn Latin," and I'm like, "Oh dear God, Italy is on its way." I can already see that one coming up. Forget senior prom, forget all that, we're going to Italy. So that's going to be a trip, and I'm so proud of her. You know, I got a son that's following in my footsteps playing baseball, and he's a very great athlete. You know, I'm so proud of him. He wakes up at 10 o'clock in the freaking morning. He thinks the Braves from the night before is the game that's on right now at 10 o'clock in the morning. And he will sit there and watch it, and I'm like, no, it's not, son. We had this argument, and I just eventually I said, you know what? Believe what you want. I just let it go. And it's beautiful to see these little bitty things and to share these moments. My sister, I met her back last August. Like I said, my dad was a Rolling Stone, and I met her back last August, and we've built a beautiful relationship. You know, my kids, oh God, they ask all the time, we're going to Aunt Christie's. They want to get spoiled. That's just that simple. When she gets there, they spoil them. And so we have built a beautiful relationship together. You know, I call her, I talk to her. You know, she doesn't necessarily understand addiction, but you know, if I would have got sober, I don't think God would have set this up in place for this to ever happen. You know, God set it up when it was supposed to happen. And I got two twin brothers I've never met. I'll get to meet them hopefully next month. I do believe one of them's coming in from Chicago. The other one doesn't want to have nothing to do with us, but that's okay. It's okay. It is what it is. It's my favorite saying, by the way. It is what it is. And that's okay. This October, I get to be in a wedding, and this time I'm not going to be intoxicated. Every wedding I've ever been in, I've been intoxicated. You know, I have great friends, and God wants me to stand beside him, and he's a great friend of mine, and I'm thinking that's just huge. You know, that's awesome. You know, people in these rooms get to know me and get to know my kids on that level. You know, which is what A is all about, you know. What I would like to say is, on August the 20th, when my sponsor sent me, it came out of the 24-hour day book, and it was August the 20th that day is what he sent me. He sent me the meditation for the day. I'm going to read the whole thing, but the meditation part is what he sent me. This is my daughter's bracelet right here. She made that for me. Ain't it cute? It's like duct tape and stuff. It's awesome. She makes duct tape bracelets. She sells them. She's awesome. All right, thought for the day. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God today is the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. When we see others solve their problems by simple reliance upon some spirit of the universe, we have to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea does. Deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in our lives are facts as old as the human race. Am I willing to rely on the spirit of the universe? The meditation for the day. And anybody in here, listen, I'm not a one white chip person. That's not my story. And if anybody in here thinks you can't do this or you have doubts, just listen to this, please. I beg you. You should not dwell too much on the mistakes, faults, and failures of the past. Be done with the shame and remorse and contempt for yourself. With God's help, develop a new self-respect. Unless you respect yourself, others will not respect you. You ran a race, you stumbled and fell. You have risen again, and now you press towards the goal of a better life. Do not stay to examine the spot where you fell. Only feel sorry for the delay and the short-sightedness that prevented you from seeing the real goal sooner. Guys, thank you for letting me stand up here and do what alcoholics like to do best, talk about themselves.
Thank you, Jeremy. That was awesome. Okay, and Jeremy has asked Shay to come and give out the chips.
My name is Shay, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Shay.
Jeremy, thank you so much for your story. I could relate to a lot of things that you shared, and you're living proof about not regretting the past nor wishing to shut the door on it. And what a gift we've got where anything that we could have been ashamed of is used to help somebody else. So thank you. Okay, here at Blue Chip Speaker Meeting, we have a chip system to mark your quantity of sobriety, not the quality, that's between your higher power and you. So the first one we offer is the white chip, the International Sign of Surrender. If you're just coming in or coming back after some research, who needs it? Okay, for 30 days and what seemed to me like 1,000 nights, we got the silver one. 3 months. 6 months. Yay! And then the A baby. 9 months. Green chip. Years or multiples.
Thank you. Hey, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. And believe it or not, I can't believe it. This is like, it was like in May, but I hadn't been in this meeting in a long time. And I'm like, this is 30 years. Which, it's like, you know, I was not too far from here. I mean, I was like wasted. And I went to this Kroger. There's these two guys talking about having some sort of drug problem. I said, what are y'all talking about? This guy turns around and looks at me and says, my name's Scoop, and I'm a vet. I mean, you know, my name's Scoop, and I'm an addict. And I want to crawl under a rock and hide. But he ran the treatment center at the VA. He says, you a vet? I said, yeah. He says, I run a treatment center at the VA. Come over there and see me tomorrow. So I went over there, and they gave me a meeting schedule, and next thing you know, I got in treatment. Anyway, the bottom line is, I'm not loaded, man. I can't believe it. You know, it's like, it's a miracle. It's all because of y'all, because I never could do it. Thank you.
All right, the only chip we offer twice is the white one. Thank you. Anybody else want to reconsider? All right. Thank your higher power for the chips that you hold.
There's a lot of things going right. People needing what they doing without. While others living high, a big piece of the pie, so many they got it wrong. As for me, when I wanted too much, ain't never enough. Myself, hide it from everyone else, save it for a rainy day. If you want to have it all the time, gotta give it away. All I had be love, kept it on. If you want love all the time, give it to someone else. I want everyone around to see. sleep. It'll never leave if I give it.